Hi everybody, welcome to this episode of Enlightenment Today. I'm Jason. In this episode, I'm going to speak about siddhis. The word siddhi is a Sanskrit noun, which means attainment, accomplishment, perfection, power, realization, or success in the sense of liberation or attaining magical powers. So siddhis are the magical powers or paranormal abilities attained through rigorous spiritual practice. In the Hindu sect of Shaivism, they define siddhis as the extraordinary powers of the soul developed through consistent meditation and often uncomfortable and grueling tapas, or awakened naturally through spiritual maturity and yogic sadhana. Now, tapas in Sanskrit means asceticism, and sadhana in Sanskrit means spiritual exertion towards an intended goal, for those who don't know those terms. The modern day students of yoga and spirituality often dismiss siddhis and are naturally skeptical when it comes to this magical dimension. And I would say it is healthy to, you know, show some skepticism towards siddhis, because there are many charlatans and fake gurus and yogis out there who depend on people believing they have paranormal abilities. But even though it is sane to be skeptical of such people, in this episode I am going to give the subject of siddhis an honest and open hearing based on the knowledge available. And I can tell you, between Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism, there is a ton of information and texts about siddhis going back thousands of years. You also need to remember that Patanjali dedicated a whole chapter to siddhis in the Yoga Sutras. So out of respect to Patanjali, it's only fair to give siddhis an honest hearing. This strong siddhi component in India and other parts of Asia originates from the archaic tradition of asceticism, tapas, and also tantra, especially the hatha yoga element of tantra. Now, for thousands of years, we've heard of world-renouncing yogins and sadhus who have attained access to this magical dimension. But keep in mind, tantrism is concerned with siddhis both in the sense of ultimate liberation and also magical powers. The reason for this is because Tantra affirms the phenomenal world and has a positive relationship with cultivating the innate psycho-spiritual potential within the body-mind system. Vedanta, on the other hand, dismisses siddhis for their own reasons, which I will discuss shortly. Tantra regards siddhis as an advantage which allows us to reach our spiritual goals more fully. But as with most things, there are two sides to each coin. For example, many practitioners of Tantra, or Tantrikas, will use these powers for less noble goals. Actually, there are whole texts composed to deal with these unsavory practices. And you still find Tantrikas following this less noble path in India today. This less noble orientation is referred to as lower Tantrism. While on the other hand, higher tantrism is motivated by spiritual liberation and the spiritual upliftment of all beings, not just humans, but also non-human beings. So be mindful that the tantric scriptures are focused on the higher element of liberation. The yoga and tantra scriptures often mention siddhis as part of an accomplished adept's arsenal of skills. The relatively unknown text called the Yoga Bija states, "The yogin is endowed with unthinkable powers. He who has conquered the senses can, by his own will, assume various shapes and make them vanish." The Yoga Shika Upanishad also explains that siddhis are the mark of a true yoga adept. From this, the Yoga Shika Upanishad's perspective, siddhis are encountered in the course of one's own spiritual practice in the same way that a pilgrim passes by sacred spots on the way to the sacred city of Varanasi. The Yoga Shika Upanishad also distinguishes two fundamental types of siddhis. First, the artificial, which is called kalpita in Sanskrit, and the second one is the non-artificial, which is called akalpita in Sanskrit, and means spontaneously arising. The artificial siddhis are produced by means of herbal concoctions, magic, mantra recitations, rituals, and alchemical elixirs, while the non-artif- non-artificial spontaneous abilities spring from self-reliance. This natural spontaneous ability is thought to be pleasing to Ishvara. Now, Ishvara here can mean either God, the Lord, or personal God, or the ultimate reality, which is just another word equal to the concept of Brahman. So your interpretation all depends on what school of Hinduism you follow. It is said that these non-artificial spontaneous siddhis manifest in those who are free from desires. In the third chapter of the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali explains a long list of siddhis. This chapter is called the Vibhuti Pada. Vibhuti means manifestation or incarnation of powers, and it probably stems from the Bhagavad Gita because the Bhagavad Gita mentions Krishna's far-flung powers. It is believed that a fully realized adept has access to these divine powers. She or he is known as a Mahasiddha, which means great adept. These great adepts enjoy what is known as the Mahasiddhis, which means great powers. In the Yoga Bhashya, it refers to these great powers, commonly known in Hinduism as Ashtasiddhi, or eight great perfections. I will explain these eight great powers. Well, actually, there are nine that are used among various schools of thought. The first is anima, which means miniaturization. This is the ability to reduce one size to the size of an atom. The second one is mahima, which means magnification. This is the ability to expand yourself to an infinitely large size. So it is believed that you can become as large as a mountain, a city, a continent, and so on. But in the Maniprabha text, it defines mahima as pervasiveness. This means it is not the physical body that expands, but rather the subtle body or mind. The third siddhi is known as garima, which means becoming infinitely heavy. The fourth great power is lagima, which means weightlessness or levitation. Think of the famous levitating yogin. The fifth great power is prapti, which means extension. This is the ability to be anywhere, anytime, according to your will. It is the ability to bridge great distances. Think of teleportation. The Yoga Bhashya seriously suggests that a great adept can touch the moon with their fingertips if they have access to this power. The sixth great power is prajñā, which means irresistible will. This is the ability to use your will as freely as you like. You can apparently realize whatever you desire, anything. The Yoga Bhashya explains that we can dive into the solid earth as if it were liquid. The seventh great power is Vashitva, which means mastery. This is the complete mastery over the material elements and their products. You essentially have control of the natural forces of life. The eighth great siddhi is Ishtva, which means lordship or supremacy over nature. This great power is the ability to have perfect mastery over the subtle energies of the material world, which bring the great adept on par with Brahma, the creator. There is also a ninth siddhi, which is sometimes included in the great eight siddhis, and it is known as Kama Avashyita, which means the fulfillment of all desires or complete satisfaction. This is the unobstructed ability to will whatever you want into manifestation. But keep in mind that this ability cannot go against the will of Ishvara. Contrary to these great powers, which vary from school to school, we have the black magical aspect of lower tantrism. In tantrism, these are recognized as the six magical actions, or shatkarma. The first magical action is shanti, meaning peace. But don't think of it how you're used to hearing shanti as peaceful. In this context, it is the ability to pacify anyone by magical means through the use of mantras, yantras, and visualization. The second magical action is vashikarana, which means subjugation. This is the ability to bring people under complete control, making them as subservient as slaves. The third magical power is sambhana, which means stoppage. This is the ability to immobilize another being or make a situation ineffective. The fourth magical action is Uktana, which means eradication. This is the ability to destroy someone from a distance where you don't even have to see them for this to happen. This is used to influence emotions between two people. The fifth magical action is Vidushvana, which means causing dissension. This is the ability to create discord among groups of people. With this ability, you'd be great at instigating a riot, for example. And the sixth and last magical action is Marana, which means causing death, or deathing, if that is a word. This is the ability to kill someone from a distance. A pretty handy ability for assassins or anyone at war. As interesting as these six magical actions may sound, they definitely fall short of the high tantric ideal of liberation through knowledge and spiritual upliftment. These six magical actions in no way reflect the ideals of tantrism, which is first and foremost a path to liberation encompassed by high moral values. Yet this misguided use of cities is why many traditions believe we should avoid them at all costs. Vedanta is especially critical of the attraction to magical powers. This is also the view held in Buddhism and Taoism. Why these traditions are super critical is because cities are useless on their own. They are just more ways for us to posture and show off, which in the end strengthens our ego, and this defeats the purpose of the spiritual process. If the spiritual process's purpose of thinning the ego out is not met by people who possess cities, then all this does is lead one to peacock consciousness, where people want to use cities to somehow showcase that they are somehow special. You find this peacock temperament especially in Hatha Yoga and the Taoist arts. All of this implies that the ego is still strong within you, and it also implies that you are not ready for the deeper mystical states of consciousness. Trying to externalize your spirituality is one of the most ego-driven things you can do, and this goes for those trying to showcase their magical powers. We must remain sensitive to the distinction between magical powers and the great work of real spiritual transformation, which in the end goes beyond cities. The goal of authentic spirituality has nothing to do with attaining magical powers, but instead is all about self-realization or God-realization, meaning you have transcended your ego construct to merge with the ultimate reality. The Siddha Siddhanta Padatti text, attributed to Goraknath, has an interesting insight into this matter of transcending cities. In the fifth chapter, it states that when the yogin has renounced all cities, they begin to merge with Shiva. In this case, Shiva as the ultimate Brahman. This insight in the Siddha Siddhanta Padatti agrees with the concerns of Vedanta because they highlight that siddhis can be the last obstacle to true liberation. So in conclusion, liberation is not dependent on siddhis. Though from the perspective of Tantra, they can benefit our liberation and benefit the spiritual upliftment of others and the world if we understand them correctly, and that is important. So in the end, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you believe in siddhis or not?